Welcome to the World of Women Create podcast series, where we bring you the magical and innovative worlds of artisans and makers from the pages of our magazines, Where Women Create and What Women Create, along with special guests who are entrepreneurs and experts in their fields. We love to share great conversation with extraordinary women, women you may be very familiar with and others you may not know. My name is Jennifer Blott, and I am the editor-in-chief of Women Create. It is my pleasure to welcome you, our listeners, and all of our guests as we explore the ups and downs, challenges and triumphs, exhilaration and immense joy of living a creative life. A creative life is a life that's rarely stagnant and always leading us down surprising paths. Thank you for being part of our creative world, the world of Women Create. I'm here today with Megan Arun. Megan is a full-time artist living on the road in her tiny home, aka her van mobile studio, with her cat Mikey. She uses her travels to places such as national and state parks as inspiration for her new adventure series of paintings. Megan's artwork has been licensed on products across almost every category, from prints, home decor, fabric, and electronics to cross-stitch, diamond painting, and more. Megan's artwork and the story of her nomadic lifestyle was featured last year in Where Women Create, and we are so excited to be reconnecting with her today. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Where are you currently?
I'm actually parked camping for the next couple of weeks just outside of Valley of Fire State Park, which is like half hour from Vegas. And I rode my bike into the state park the other day, and the place is phenomenal. I will definitely be using it for a future painting. I was literally like 10 feet from big horn sheep. Like, they were just everywhere, and the scenery is like insane. This is why I do van life. The experiences I get to see and then being able to translate them into paintings, it's a great life.
Okay, so I want to let people know a little bit more about how this all came about. 2 years ago, you decided to go on the road with your artwork, with your lifestyle. Tell us how this all came about.
I was living in Miami. I'd lived in Florida for almost 25 years, a few years back home in Alaska, because that's where I grew up. But I'd been living in Miami for like 4 years and was doing a lot of mountain bike racing, was really involved in the cycling scene there. And then the pandemic hit. And as we know, that changed a lot of stuff for people. And mountain bike racing was shut down, and it took, you know, a while for it to pick back up again. But I just felt like something was missing in my life. I lived in this beautiful studio loft apartment right near downtown Miami. And one day, I'd been following van lifers because that actually became a really big thing during the pandemic. And so on social media, I'd been following them. Just struck me one day, I'm like, this is what I should be doing. I've always had this wanderlust. I always want to be moving and experiencing different things. And I have throughout my life. I've lived in a lot of different places and moved quite a bit. But I was like, this is it. It was just like one of those light bulb moments. I'm like, I want to go on the road. I want to experience so much that this country has to offer. That, you know, you can go on a trip to, say, the Grand Canyon and go for a week and spend a fortune basically flying and traveling and stuff. I'm like, this way I can cover so many places and just get like crazy inspiration for my art. And I have. So I just packed up. It was September of 2021. And I sold almost everything I had. I bought a van and drove it straight across the country all the way to Washington State because I have family there. And I parked my van in their driveway, and over the winter, which I don't like the winter, I don't like snow or ice, but I was like, I'm going to do this. And I completely converted the van myself 100% and turned it into a tiny home. And then March 12th of 2022, I hit the road, and I haven't regretted it since. It's like probably the best thing I've ever done in my life, besides have my daughter.
I love it. And I can still see all those incredible photos of the interior of your van. Tell us how some of the things you did to get it ready to go as your studio and your home. What did you do to it?
So much research, like endless hours of blogs and YouTube videos, just trying to figure out the layout of it because it's 60 square feet. And I've lived in like small houses before as a child and whatnot, but never anything 60 square feet. And so, of course, the main priority for me was to have studio space to figure out where I could store supplies, what kind of supplies I could store. And so, and then of course the solar power, because I'm completely off grid. Everything on my electronics are run off of solar power. So extensive research for that, because I don't know anything electrical. I actually used to be in Florida. I was a custom home builder. For many years, I was a licensed residential contractor, so I had a little understanding of how to build stuff, and I'd helped build some cabins in Alaska. So I had a little bit of a head start with that, but I wanted it to be nice and cozy in here, but also comfortable for the painting. So I built a special drawer for my paper that I do all my paintings on, because I don't have any room for canvases. I don't have any room for like wood, you know, canvas type of thing. So I do everything on paper. And so I had to build a special 24 by 24 drawer that slid out, and just keeping all of that in mind was like crucial for building the van out. And, but it also has, I had to build a bed base, lots of countertop. I have a sink with running water in it. So yeah, it was just wanting to keep it cute and fun and artsy, but at the same time, practical. And I gave up an indoor shower and bathroom in lieu of space for my art supplies, basically, and my bike.
That so is dedication to your craft. That's
yes,
for sure.
Yes.
That's shower comes price. Second.
Yeah, who needs a shower, right? But I have like a solar shower, so I can take showers outside. I mean, I live out in the outdoors, and I do mostly dispersed camping, which is boondocking, off grid, completely out by myself most of the time. I don't spend a lot of time in cities. That's just not my whole reason for wanting to do van life, was to live outdoors. So living in a city isn't really conducive to that. So I try to avoid it. It happens, but usually only if I'm going to visit my daughter. And that would be usually Reno or Vegas is where I typically see her, because her boyfriend lives in Reno, and now her fiance, and his family lives in Vegas. So I'm going to meet them in a couple weeks. So that's about the only time I go into the cities.
And then your family in Washington State, you also go there sometimes and use that as a home base when you need to.
Yeah, I go up there in the summers, just because everywhere, you know, too far south, I don't have any air conditioning in my van. Again, it's a space issue. And I have a fan and really good ventilation, and I can do comfortably like 75 degrees. It gets close to 80, and I can deal with it, but my cat, even though she loves heat, and it could be 80 degrees and she'll be sitting in the cab, which is the hottest place in the van, but I still want to make sure she's comfortable. So Washington is the perfect place for that. It's fun to just connect with family, because most of the time I'm on the road, sometimes for months, and I really don't see anybody else in person other than, you know, strangers at the grocery store or something.
And so I know you're really plugged in with technology. I know your daughter helped you. Tell us how you're able to communicate with the world when you're in really remote places.
It started out, I would just have my cell service, and I had a hotspot, but that limited me to certain places that I could camp or that I would want to go exploring, because the cell service wouldn't work there. Yeah. And I, for safety reasons, I always wanted to have a way to be in contact with people. My daughter can track where I'm at through like Google location and stuff. She always knows where I am, but if I don't have cell service, then that's becomes a bit of an issue. And she, of course, is always worried about my safety. So in Christmas of 22, she bought me Starlink. And what a game changer. Like, I can be anywhere, completely out, as remote as you can imagine, and I have full Wi-Fi service. So that's the main way that I, like right now, I'm connected. I have cell service here, but the Starlink is such a better for streaming and video and stuff. It's like your home Wi-Fi that you have from Comcast or whoever. So that's the main way. And it's just literally the best thing for any van lifer.
How old is your daughter?
She's 30.
Oh, wow. I know you mentioned her in the story, and it feels like you have a really close relationship and she's really supportive of your nomadic life.
Yeah, no, she's great. If she has been from day one, when I told her about it, I'm like, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm going to go on the road. I'm going to go live on the road in my van. And she's like, no, that's great. She's from day one, very supportive. She's never not been backing me up on it. We have a really good relationship, always have. So.
So when did you last leave Washington? How long have you been on the road on this trip?
The end of September. Yeah. Well, because speaking of my daughter, her and her now fiance gifted his mom and I a 10-day trip to Egypt last September. Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's wow.
Yes.
I love your daughter. I don't know her, but I love her. She's great.
Really, the year before that, she took me on a 10-day trip to Europe and Morocco. So I do have an amazing child. She's the best. But so I'd spent more time last summer in Washington than I normally would, just because I left my cat with my cousin and left my van there so that I could go on this trip. And we came back September 22nd. And September 24th, I was on the road. I'm like, okay, I got to get back on the road.
6 months now, pretty much.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I won't be going back to Washington until July, just because, like I said, my daughter's getting married in Vegas in June. And so I just want, it doesn't make sense for me to drive all the way up to Washington, then drive back down to Vegas. So I'll just be staying in some cooler spots in June, because Vegas would be way too hot in the van. So that's kind of my plans for the next few months.
Okay. So give me highlights of where you've been since September.
I left and went straight to California, and I went to Lawson Volcanic National Park was one of my first stops, because I hadn't been there yet, because that's one of those places. It's a very high elevation. There's only a few months out of the year you can actually visit there because of the snow. And I got there just right before the snow came in. So it was perfect timing. And then from there, I went to Yosemite. It was my first time going to Yosemite. Yeah. And I wanted to go to Sequoia and Kings Canyon, which is just south of Yosemite National Parks. But I was going to Yosemite and I was driving up this steep, windy, crazy road, which if I'd have known, I wouldn't have done it. I get to the top up in this tiny little town, Grovefield, I think it's called. And I was going down a tiny little hill and I was putting on the brakes, and all of a sudden my van starts revving up as I'm braking, like speeding up. And I'm like, whoa, this is really weird. I've never had any issues with my van. It's like a workhorse. And so I pulled over and I'm like, okay, that's really strange. Maybe just some weird tweaky thing. Started going again down a little hill and it did the same thing again. So I'm like freaking out. I'm like, this is really scary. I'm way up here in the mountains, you know, like 6,000 foot of elevation. I have to go back down eventually. Yeah. Very dangerous. So luckily there was a mechanic, like one mile behind me. I went back there. We looked over everything, researched everything on the internet it could possibly be, checked everything, could find nothing wrong. He test drove it. And I'm like, this is just like really scary. I'm like, I don't know what to do, because he can't find anything wrong with it. So I was just really careful, went and visited Yosemite and decided not to go to Sequoia and Kings Canyon, just because, again, twisty, windy roads way up in the mountains. So I've been driving it ever since and it's fine. So I don't know if maybe something he did, connecting, disconnecting hoses, fixed it. I don't know. Yeah. But it kind of like threw a little kink in my plans. And that's part of van life, is you just go with whatever's thrown at you, adapt your plans and just go with the flow.
Yeah. You can only control it so much, I'm guessing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You're dealing with weather. You're dealing with all kinds of factors. Yeah.
Right now, I'm near Las Vegas, and the weather right now has been blowing 40 miles an hour gusts, which is not fun in a van because the whole thing rocks. It's been raining. It's overcast. So my solar, I have to minimize my power usage because of the, you know, I need sun to charge my solar panels. So it's just all a big part of it. But weather is the main reason my plans will change. It's like I chase the sun. Literally, I'm looking for the sun.
And I was actually thinking about that, you know, in your story. There are these glorious photos of you in the sun out in nature painting. I'm guessing you have an active blog, you have a business, or do you use this sort of darker times, the rainier days, to take care of the business side of things and then sort of use those beautiful days for the actual creating?
Kind of a combination of both. I would rather, if it's really overcast and kind of dreary outside, I'd rather be painting, because I paint such colorful, vibrant art. It's kind of like bringing the sun into my life when there isn't any out there. But of course, when it is nice outside and I can paint outside, that's like the best. But it's a combination of riding my bike as well. That's a big part of how I see these places. I would prefer to ride my bike through a national park or a state park, which is what I've done, just because cycling is like my second passion behind art. And so I combine that. That's easiest to do when the weather is nice, obviously. When I rode my bike here the other day, I had to go down this crazy hill. It's in this valley, and went down this descent, but coming back up, it's like 1,000 foot gain in elevation. and there was 20 mile per hour headwinds. So it was a very difficult, brutal ride, but it's again, working around the weather as much as possible.
Okay. So I'm trying to picture this. If you're on your bike and you stumble upon a vista that is just amazing, have your supplies with you? Do you take a photo and try
to take a photo?
Okay.
And video.
Got it.
Yeah. I make an insane amount of stops on my bike. What should be an hour ride sometimes turns into a 3 hour ride. Like I rode my bike at Zion National Park the other day, and that place is just epic. But it was literally a 20 mile ride. And say if I was doing like a super slow ride at 10 miles an hour, you know, a couple hours, it ended up being like 3.5, I think, because I kept stopping. You come around every turn. It's like, oh my gosh, I have to take a photo of this. I want to memorialize it in my brain, but also to have reference photos to come back to. And then I post on my blog. So I need the photos for that as well. And social media videos. And so photos and videos are the best way to do that. I've thought about taking supplies with me, but just the logistics of it, carrying them, setting up could be difficult.
Waiting for it to dry, like, or not wanting to like
exactly
hurt it as you're riding your bike back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought about maybe if I'm driving into a park sometimes, because I do that as well. If I want to go for hikes, I don't combine hikes with my bike because I just don't want to leave my bike anywhere. So, but I thought maybe if I'm driving into a place, I could stop and paint there. But then I just get so wrapped up in what I'm seeing to take the time to stop and paint is just never quite worked out. But it's fun. I have the photos and videos.
And tell me about some of the wildlife you see when you go
out. Well, just like I said the other day, the bighorn sheep, like they were literally 10 feet from me, and there was a mommy and a baby. They're everywhere in this park. They're on the roads, up in the hills, and just crazy. And I actually saw another bighorn sheep at the Grand Canyon. But as far other than that, I mean, I see a lot of coyotes when I'm camping. And hear them quite a bit, like they'll come around, which is a little scary because I have my cat with me. So if I hear them, I'm very careful with her. She doesn't venture very far. She always keeps the van in view. She's kind of a scaredy cat, literally. And the van is her safe space. But that, I've seen a lot of wild burros. I saw elk one time. I was parked out by the Grand Canyon. They literally, a tiny little herd of them came into my camping spot. Wild horses. In near the Reno area, there's plenty of them there. Lots of birds. Well, one of the most amazing experiences, I was at Pinnacles National Park in California, and they have the California condor there. And there's only like 400 or 500 of them left in the wild. And I'd climbed up this crazy hike. I was the only person for like 3 hours on this trail, which was a little scary because I worry about like cougars, particularly mountain lions. So I carry bear mace and I have my hiking sticks, but I'm very aware of my surroundings because I'm hiking by myself. But anyway, so I climb up this crazy, steep, winding trail. I get to the top and all of a sudden the California condors are just circling over my head. And they're massive. Their wingspan, I think, is like 9-10 feet. So they're just these huge, majestic creatures that are just, and they were everywhere, and you could see where they perched and all their like bird droppings and stuff coming down the sides of these beautiful mountain vistas. It was just, that was one of my favorite wildlife encounters.
I have really serious spring fever, and I feel like I want to live vicariously through you. I would love to be on the open road and seeing those vistas.
It's amazing. There's nothing that really compares to it. I'll be somewhere and I'll just literally be in tears. Because I'm like, this is that I get to live this life and see these incredible stuff. And I feel like, sure, you know, millions and millions of people visit national parks every year in state parks and stuff, but there's still nothing compares to experiencing it yourself and just being out there and just, there's so much beauty in this country that I don't think people even recognize it. Sometimes it's even in their own backyard. For instance, when I did Pinnacles, I wrote about it and posted some pictures on Facebook. And there were people in California, they're like, where is this? I'm like, it's one of the newer national parks. It's not as well known. It's very minimally trafficked. And they're like, wow, this place is amazing. They're like, I only live an hour from there. And I didn't know it was there. And I'm like, yes, check it out. And the way that the public lands are maintained by the parks is just phenomenal. They do an amazing job, and that we get to experience that.
You know, I have to wonder if people take it for granted. I know you have done series of artworks based on the parks. Maybe maybe you will be the new PR person for the national parks.
I would love to get involved in the national parks. And my art's a little, like a lot of the art that you see in the national parks, it's more traditional style, more traditionally colored. Because obviously my art is extremely whimsical, almost a pop art, insane colors, and don't depict things in a traditional, realistic way. You can still look at them and be like, oh yeah, I know which park that is. You know that's what the park is. So once I have enough, I finished Arches National Park yesterday. So I have 8 national parks painted, and then I have some smaller ones of national parks, like out of my sketchbook, places like Lake Tahoe and other places as well. So I think once I get a large enough amount of the national parks painted, maybe approach some of the parks and see. You never know unless you ask.
Absolutely.
So I just want to have a really good collection to present them with, because the plan is to visit all 63 of them. I can't do all of them in the van because the Virgin Islands are included on there. American Samoa is on there. And then Alaska, my home. Some of those you can't get to a van. I'll take my van up there 1 year and spend the summer, but I think there's a couple of them that you actually have to fly to. There's no roads to get to them. But all of the ones like in the lower 48, I'm up to 20 right now.
Oh, I was going to ask you. Okay. So 20 of 63. And what, do you have a timeline for this? Like you hope to get to them?
It's literally however long it takes me. I don't have any plans of settling down anytime soon. I really enjoy this lifestyle, and there's so much I have yet to see. Like I'm hoping maybe the end of this summer to cut across the northern part of the country before snow sets in and make my way all the way up to Maine, which is where Acadia National Park is.
I went to Acadia for the first time last month. Yeah.
So exciting. Yeah. I'm excited to see that one.
Yeah.
That's kind of a rough plan for the rest of the year and then work my way back down to Florida. Florida has 3 national parks. I've been to the Everglades, which I actually just painted that one of the painting before this. I've been to Dry Tortugas, but I've never been to Biscayne National Park. So I'm going to work my way down there when the weather is cold enough in Florida to be able to do that, because it's just south. Biscayne National Park is just south of Miami. And I get to see my daughter, because that's where she spends half her time in Miami, half her time in Reno.
Okay, so I have to ask you, how many miles are on your van?
It actually, right now, I bought it. It had 78,000, because they're very hard to find used. If you order one new, takes anywhere from 6 months to a year, 2 years. And I wanted the Ford Transit, and I wanted it to be a medium height, because I'm 5'8". So with the medium height and the way I built it out, I can stand up in here, which was kind of key. I didn't want something where, you know, I couldn't stand up in. And then it's the medium length. So it's like, I think I have 10, 11 foot of space in here and 6 foot wide, or a little over 6 foot wide. But this was the only one, like in all of Florida, that I found exactly the one I wanted. And so it had 78,000 miles on it. It had been a fleet vehicle. It has a few dents and dings in it and stuff, which I actually liked, because it's as far as like stealth camping, they call it, or whatever. It doesn't look like it's this super expensive, fancy van, to where people are less likely, I hope. I've never had any issues with breaking in or anything like that. I lock it up really well. But so I'm up to 104,000 miles. So in 2 years, you know, less than 25,000 miles, really. So I put 10 to 12,000 miles a year on it, which isn't bad, but I know a lot of van lifers, they just jump from place to place, which is fine, and rack up a lot of miles as well doing that, but they'll only stay at a place for maybe 3 or 4 days, if that, or just go into a park and visit it and move on to the next place. And I prefer to stay for a week up to 2 weeks in one spot, because it allows me to ride my bike and to get work done. Because if I'm traveling all over the place, I would never get any painting done. And when you're on like public land, particularly BLM, Bureau of Land Management, or Forest Service roads, both of those allow you to stay in one spot for up to 2 weeks. So I take advantage of that, which also lessens the amount of miles I put on my van.
In a given day, it sounds like you don't have very stringent goals, like I have to arrive by such and such time. It sounds like you can be a little more leisurely. How many miles would you put in on a really like ambitious day of driving?
The most I've ever driven in one day is 10 hours. And I had to stop at a rest stop and take a nap halfway through, because I don't mind driving and I get to see a lot of beautiful places while I'm driving, but I'm not one of those people that's really like, oh, I love to drive. I'm just like, it gets me from point A to point B, and I see beautiful places. So I try to keep my, not necessarily miles, but I don't usually drive more than 4, max 5 hours in a day. That's just what I'm most comfortable with, you know, have to stop and get coffee a couple times, but that's about it. So I make my plan, my routes out that way. I use the iOverlander app, which is phenomenal for anybody who lives on the road, because it has reviews. People will post reviews of camping sites they've been to, whether it has cell service, if you need 4x4, because I don't, I just have two-wheel drive, so I have to be careful. Where I did get stuck in the sand earlier this year, which was not fun. So this app gives you all that kind of information. If there's, it tells you where there's like free water nearby, mechanics, laundry mats, all these things, and people review them. So I will plan out using that, and then I'll use Google Maps satellite imagery to kind of scope out the area to see what the roads are like going in. And I try to park within a mile of a paved surface, because I just have a road bike. I don't have like a mountain bike or anything, so I need a paved surface to ride on, whether it's just a trail. Sometimes I'm lucky, the national parks especially, I can ride in those. And I try to find somewhere to park off of a road that's not heavily trafficked. Like, I've only ever rode on a highway once, but because it had this massive shoulder, if you call it, it was almost like 2 lanes wide shoulder the whole way. So I was like, oh, this works. But I find all of that stuff with Google imagery satellite. That's just kind of how I plan out where I'm going to go. And usually a national park or a state park or a national monument, something like that, will be nearby to visit as well.
And then for things like where to go to shower, if you need to find a restroom, you know where the truck stops are, the rest areas, the rec centers, you know, yes, where all those. Yeah.
Yes. And those are all also on iOverlander apps. They put all of that stuff on there as well. I've stayed at a couple of paid campgrounds here and there, just depending on if I'm in an area and it doesn't have any good dispersed camping sites, the free ones. And if I'm going to stay at a campsite and pay for it, I'm like, they better have hot showers. Yeah. I know a lot of other van lifers, they'll have like a Planet Fitness or some kind of a, you know, mm-hmm, national gym membership. And they'll use that for showers. But again, those are all in cities, and so that doesn't make sense for me.
Are there any creature comforts you miss when you're on the road?
Maybe the bathroom. It's fine. I mean, I think for me, the transition into the uncomfortable side of living like this, the bathrooms mainly, the weather, different things, is I think it's easier for me than the majority of people doing this, because I grew up in Alaska, off-grid in the wilds of Alaska. There's no roads. We lived in a floating house. We used outhouses and buckets for our bathrooms. We used buckets with a spigot for our showers. So it's kind of living this lifestyle isn't very different from how I grew up. Sure, I lived my adult life very comfortably, you know, with all the modern conveniences, really big, beautiful houses, because I was a custom home builder. But this is just kind of going back to my childhood roots. So it doesn't really impact me too much. Like, even if when I visit my daughter, or when I'm in Washington and I'm staying, you know, parked at my cousin's house, sure, the amenities, you know, the conveniences are fine. But when I'm on the road, I don't necessarily miss it. It doesn't really affect me that much.
You have a little kitchenette. Do you have a stovetop burner? What do you have in there?
I started out with a propane two burner camping cook stove. And this was just as I was figuring out, making sure I'd have enough solar to run electric appliances. And then I found a little rice cooker, a tiny mini little rice cooker that I can run. It was a 12 volt, just plug it into a cigarette lighter. Worked great for a lot of things. And then that finally broke like 2 years in. And I got another one that's like a skillet type of one that I have to plug into the regular AC 120 outlet, but it doesn't really affect, it's like 250 watts, which isn't a lot of draw, but I can cook literally anything in it. Like, it's amazing. And of course, then I don't have to buy propane. I don't have to deal with the cook stove. I have like a little electric mug kettle, again, cigarette lighter, plug that in to heat my water for coffee. I have a tiny, like mini fridge, because I don't like to cook. I'm very simple with what I eat. So it's just enough to like store some leftovers, or my cat's wet food goes in there. But that's about it. My cooking is very simple. That's about the extent of my kitchen. Like I said, I do have a sink with running water. It has a foot pump, not hot water. I can just heat that up in a kettle. You know, I have a teapot as well if I want to heat up on the camp stove. Say if it's been raining for a few days or whatever, or I'm not somewhere I can take an outside shower, I'll just heat the water up in the tea kettle to wash my hair, you know, and sponge bath type of thing. So it's fine. It works out great.
You figured all this out in 2 years. It sounds like you've got it down.
I do. It's like literally everything is so perfect at this point. There's not anything I would change. Like I'll see all these other van builds. Like I follow people or van builders and I'll see all these new things they're doing. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. But then I'll like, it's not practical for me.
Yeah.
Just because of the way, I mean, I put so much time and effort into setting this up, laying it out exactly how I want it in here. And I'm like, even if I were to get a bigger van at some point, I'm like, I wouldn't want it any taller because this thing already catches the wind when you're driving anyways. And it's like two hands death grip on the steering wheel, sometimes driving through like valleys and plains. I'm like, I don't want anything taller. And then if you get anything longer, you can't necessarily, if you're in a town or city or whatever, you can't park in some places because this is the maximum size for a regular parking space. So I see all these things. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of perfect. I'm like, maybe down the line when my daughter has kids, I'll get like a school bus and convert it and they can come travel with me.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So, but that would be, you know, she's not even married yet. She doesn't have any kids yet. But these are just thoughts for the future. But right now, everything in here just works perfect for me, for the painting. I've actually had a couple commissions over the last couple of years. One of them was a 2-foot by 4-foot painting on a canvas wrapped. There's only 10 foot of space in here. So 4 foot, you're almost taking up half of the space in here to paint a painting. And I managed it. And then I did a 3-foot by 3-foot painting once. So I can do those, but only on a, you know, custom basis, because I can't really store them anywhere that size, but I can paint that big if I need to.
So tell us about your art career. I know you mentioned being a contractor for a number of years.
Yeah.
And I know you've done all kinds of licensing. Tell me how this came about.
Ever since I was a little girl, I tell my family I want to be an artist. Like that was the dream career for me, was to be an artist. And I was always sketching and painting and drawing and coloring books. Like my childhood, my mom is very creative as well, an exceptional artist, and always encouraged all of us to find our creative side. And for me, that was always like painting and drawing. But then like reality sets in and it's like, oh, you can't really make a career out of being an artist, is what you're taught. So I went to college. I got a master's degree in political science, of all things. I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I had my daughter and I'm like, I'm not going to take away my daughter's childhood and not be there to become a lawyer. So I did some teaching for a little while. I worked at the University of Central Florida, which is where I graduated from, in their political science department. And then my ex and I started the custom home building business and I was the licensed contractor. But there was always, I was always creating and there was just always this nagging, I really wish I could do more with my art. And then the internet came along and I started seeing artists were listing their art on eBay and selling constantly every single thing they listed. So one day, just on a whim, I'm like, I had painted a landscape, just some trees, kind of abstract, and put it on eBay. There was some interest. And then like in the last 5 minutes, there was this crazy bidding war. And the price, and I'm refreshing and the price is going up and up and up. And I'm like, this is insane. These people don't know me. I'm not a known artist. This is only the first time I've listed something for sale. And I was instantly hooked. I'm like, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to become an artist. And then it took me up until 2008 before I could do full time because I had a difficult partner. And so we'd moved to Alaska and we weren't building the homes anymore. It was right when the 2008 recession hit. And I'm like, this is it. I'm going to start full-time selling my art. And so I did, selling on eBay exclusively. I didn't even have a website, nothing at that point. It was just all eBay. And I would paint up to 11 paintings in a day. I was just sitting there, just production mode. I'd line them up. I'd paint all the backgrounds. Those are dry. I'd go back and then I'd paint in the trees and the circles, which was what I was known for at the time. And just from there, it kind of snowballed. In 2009, I started doing the licensing and ended up being like, my art was on TV shows from Grey's Anatomy. It was featured in the Oprah magazine, Family Circle. There was even this one I didn't know about it. People were started messaging me, other artists one day. They're like, your art is on TV. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, go on Good Morning America, Inside Edition. You're my winter sparkle painting, which is just a super colorful rainbow colors with a tree and these circles and a moon, and one of my most popular paintings I've ever done. And there was this story about this girl. She had a messy room, and her dad one day, he was tired of her not having a clean room, so he took everything and put it out on the driveway, and it became this big internet story. And during the interviews with the dad and the daughter, the only thing in her room was a print of my art on the wall.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, that's kind of cool that just randomly ended up there. But yeah, so it's just been, ever since then, I'm like, I don't want to ever do anything else. This is like the dream. It's a little tough right now. There's going through some changes in the art world with licensing as well. The AI art. Yeah, I have a hard time with that. I've even had one of the companies I'm licensed with, I asked them recently, you know, you want some new art? I have new art. And they're like, no, we're only using AI art now. And I'm like, wow. And I know a lot of other artists, we're going through this transitional period, and it's frustrating, but it's such a passion for me that I'm just going to adapt, kind of like I do with living on the road. It's, you know, things get, you know, curveballs thrown at me and have to change plans. And so I'm kind of in that stage with my art as well. But I think with the new direction I'm going with the travel art that's tied in with my story, I think it'll, you know, appeal to people. And I hope inspire women particularly to just do whatever you want to do. Like if you want to go live on the road, or if you want to, you know, pursue a certain career, whatever your passion is, like do that. Like, I just hope that this really inspires, especially women of a certain age. I'm 51. And I think there's not as many of us out there. There's a lot of the younger generation, and they'll do it for, you know, several years, and then they'll settle down and stuff. But I'm single. I don't have anything tying me down, and I'm able to just really do whatever I want. And I think that's something that I hope inspires other women.
Well, and you had your daughter fairly young. So
21. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I see this a lot with women. They have families really young, and then all of a sudden when they're on the other side, they're still relatively young.
Yeah. You know?
They're in the late 40s, early 50s, and they realize, okay, this is my time now.
Exactly. And that's kind of how I felt, especially after I got divorced 7 years ago. I was like, this is my time. I'm just going to do whatever I want. And so I was mountain bike racing, you know, traveling all over the Southeast, doing that. I had my own team. I had my own cycling apparel line with my art on it. And I was like, this is just great. And then when that kind of didn't work out, like I said earlier, I'm like, I'm going to do something else. And I'm free to do whatever strikes me at that moment. And I understand if, you know, not everybody has that option. If you have a significant other and they're not, you know, necessarily into that, but even just take a weekend, go travel by yourself or whatever. It's like, there's ways to get out there and discover this country or the world. I mean, I get to do the world travels with my daughter as well. So it's just, there's something about travel, seeing other places, experiencing new things, new cultures, new landscapes. It's one of the most rewarding things you can do for yourself, for your soul.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And those memories inside of you, I mean, those are priceless. They're all inside of you when you leave and you take them with you, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes I'll just a memory I'll pop in of a place that I visited in the past 2 years. And I'm like, oh, that seems forever ago. I'm like, I can't believe I actually got to experience that, got to go to somewhere so epic. I'm like, I want to go back.
Yeah. I do have to ask you something that you mentioned earlier. I'm really intrigued by the idea of selling art on eBay, because I always think of eBay as being sort of more vintage, and maybe Etsy being more for art. Were you doing 1 week auctions on these?
Yes, they were 7 day auctions, and I was paying for what was called a featured listing. It was like a $27 flat fee. So I would be like on the top of the listings for art, so more people would see it. But I stopped selling on eBay several years after I started. So I started the full time was 2008. By 2010, I wasn't selling on there anymore because they started changing the rules and where sellers couldn't leave feedback for buyers. So that was kind of a big problem. And then also the proliferation of Chinese knockoffs. eBay was flooded with them. So it's like you couldn't even barely be seen, even with the featured listers anymore. There was just, and they were selling for so cheap, I couldn't compete with their prices. And then they also were copying my art and selling it on there as well. I can go on the internet. I don't do it because it's depressing. I could go on the internet any day and find people illegally copying my art. And it just gets worse and worse. And then with the AI thing, I mean, I've won federal copyright cases, companies, you know, using my art, but it's not worth the frustration and the time. And it's just, at that point, I moved on to selling on Etsy. And that was back when drop shipping wasn't even a thing. There's companies out there, they have products anywhere from like all the home decor, clothes, t-shirts, hats, shower curtains, prints. Mm-hmm. And you set up an account with them and you put your art on all these products. And then you can automatically, once you put it on this site, it automatically uploads to Etsy as a listing. Oh. And they handle all of the creating the products, the shipping, everything. And then you get paid a certain amount for that. But you don't, it's really convenient, especially, I mean, I'm trying to do a little bit more of that right now, even on my own website, just with things like stickers and postcards, because I don't have the room to keep inventory of stuff like of anything really other than the original paintings. But it became a really big issue with, again, the Chinese just selling for super cheap, and then other people doing drop shipping. That's one of the shifts in the art world right now, the online art world, is Etsy became flooded during the pandemic with people thinking, oh, you know, I'm working from home. I'm just going to go create some stuff. They'll go, you know, get some stock images and create t-shirts and hats and mugs and stuff. And so the handmade vintage stuff, which is what Etsy started out with, is just a bunch of garbage that's all the same. And it's just these, you know, clip art stock images. It's like, this isn't handmade art, which is what Etsy started out as. So I quit selling on Etsy as well. I have a shop now, but I don't really do much with it. It's so hard to get seen on there. So I focus mostly on my own website. You know, blogging is becoming more of a thing, like sharing. I've never really done a lot of blogging, but last year I was like, why don't I just share my experiences? Here's another way for me to share my experiences, because I'm not big into like long form YouTube videos and stuff. I'll do short little reels here and there of the painting process or maybe a bike ride or whatever, but I would rather write. That to me, that's more of a creative form. So I've started doing more blogging about my travels and experiences and stuff.
I'm thinking of your artwork. You said insane colors.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it because I think of it as it's technicolor. It's psychedelic. It's vivid. It's have you done illustrations for children's book?
No, and I've thought about that. I'm just like even doing commissions and stuff. I've done a lot of them over the years. I don't like to be constrained too much. Mm. I just want to go with exactly whatever I'm feeling at that moment. And however the inspiration of what I'm putting down on paper strikes me. My mom actually just on her own had illustrated her own stories and stuff. Cause she also wrote, it made me think, I'm like, oh, I could probably do that. But then I was like, yeah, realistically, I don't think it would be fun for me. Mm-hmm. And I try to keep my art like really fun. The process of it. And for people, I mean, the main thing people tell me whenever they see my art, they're like, it makes me happy. And I'm like, I couldn't ask for anything more. I'm not one of those people who can do dark, you know, political art. I've done a couple, but normally it's like, I'm a very happy, upbeat type of person. I'm like, and that's just how I want my art to come across. I don't want people to look at it and be like, oh, what is this about? What is the deeper meaning behind it? It's like, the meaning behind it is just, this is beauty and color and fun and uplifting. I had somebody message me the other day. I don't remember. It's on my website. I put it on my website. This quote that was like, can I use that? I'm like, I feel like this is exactly the feeling that I want to convey. And he said, your art speaks to how we wish the world around us really was, not how it always is. And I was like, that's such a fitting way to describe my art. It's just about being happy and joyful.
I love it. It has that magic. It's a little bit of fantasy, a little bit of, just the colors are just a little bit brighter. Everything's just a little more beautiful.
Yeah. And I've always had a fascination with fantasy, like stories and stuff. I mean, I'll rewatch all of the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit at least once a year. So fantasy has kind of always been, even though my art's not necessarily fantasy type art, it has that whimsical, magical kind of vibe throughout it. And I think it just comes from, I would rather live with wherever the unicorns and the fairies are. That's like my world.
Oh, I love it. I love how you don't put too many restrictions on your time or how you create. You seem to go with the flow, and that's wonderful. I'm guessing you do put some pressure on yourself, some personal goals, but it sounds like it's a little more intuitive and you let the path take its own course.
I've always been kind of a free spirit in that sense, you know, and like the wanderlust has always been there. Like when I go on trips, so for instance, when my daughter and I went to Europe, we didn't really plan out what we were going to do. We had the places that we went to, but we're like, the first day, we're just going to go explore and walk around the cities because we'd have a couple days in each city. And then, you know, if we saw something or heard about something that we'd want to go see that maybe we'd have to make reservations for, then we'd do that. I don't like going on tour guides for the most part, again, because it's so restrictive. You have to be there at a certain time. You're limited to what everybody else wants to do. And I just want to experience it kind of in a natural way, the way things are, or just on my own terms. And I'm sure part of that is the controlling relationship I was in for almost 25 years really impacted that as well. Even though, like I said, I've always been a free spirit, that really like dampened that down. So now I'm like, I have the freedom to do whatever I want, whenever I want. And sometimes I have to remind myself of that. I'm like, there's nobody restricting me at all in my life. And I don't allow that. I have boundaries. Yeah, go with the flow. That's my motto in life right now.
You're an inspiration. It would be very interesting for those of us who've never lived that life to see how long we could do it. I don't know that we could be doing it for 2 years.
It's interesting. So I follow some of the main like van life influencer women. And like I said, the majority of them are young. They're in their 20s, maybe 30s. But there's this one girl that just started out. She's like 19. And even though she'd grown up with her family living in RVs and stuff her whole life, the instant she got her own van and hit the road, she went straight to San Diego and she's like, oh, I need to be around people. I need people, people. And she's been there the whole time and just hanging out with friends and stuff. And at one point, and she's young, I get that. She went somewhere and was going to camp by herself. And she was like posting all these stories about how scared she was and this and that. And I'm like, I don't really live the van life the way a lot of people do because I'm out by myself all the time. I've never gone to any community van life event. That gives me anxiety. I'm like, I would rather, the whole point for me is to be one with nature, connect with nature. And so the way I do this is very much different from the majority of van lifers out there, especially women. And I understand that, like, I would love to go to Baja, Mexico. That's like a huge thing. Like it looks so incredible, but you do have to go with other people or particularly a man. I hate to say it. You know what I mean? Or a large group of women just because of the safety factor. At some point, maybe I will or find a family to go with me just to do stuff like that. But other than that, yeah, it's just, it's different, but it's fun. And like I said, I hope it inspires women even a little bit just to get out and do something out of your comfort zone, you know?
And travel. Remember travel. Yes. A lot of people after the pandemic, they sort of shelved the idea of travel. And boy, it does so much for you. It restores you and inspires you. Yeah.
It does. Absolutely. Again, whether it's, you know, a trip to Egypt or just go in to visit the national park, you know, a couple hours down the road from wherever somebody lives. It's just getting out of your normal routine, outside of your comfortable life. What is that saying about stepping outside of your comfort zone is where, you know, the beauty in life happens type of thing.
You are an ideas person. I love it. I love it. And it sounds to me that most of these ideas come to fruition.
They do. I've always been one of those people who, if I decide I'm going to do something, it's going to happen. Even in the toughest of circumstances, I was like, this is what I want to do. I'm going to do it. No matter, there'd be consequences for doing what I wanted to do, even though it wasn't harming anybody, but I still did them. I just have to make things happen. I have to follow things to fruition, whatever it is, you know?
Well, I'm glad you do.
Thank you.
your story was wonderful for us to share. And if not anything else, you are a reminder that we need to get out and travel and see things and feel things.
Yes. That's that's it. The feelings that you get when you experience new places is, for me, that's the best part of it. Like, I'll be out there and I'm like, this is why there's so much incredible beauty out there. It's why let it just pass us by? We're only here for a short amount of time. Go experience and feel as much as you can. Why not?
I love it. Well, thank you. It's been wonderful speaking with you today.
Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate the feature last year, being on the podcast, the support. It means a lot. Thank you.
And your work's wonderful. Keep sharing it. I know you continue to create. You're very prolific. Keep doing it. I love it.
Thank you. I have too many ideas in my head. I can't even get them all out. I've never had artist block, so that's a good thing. Knock on wood.
Well, thank you. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you again for joining us today for our World of Women Create podcast. In a world filled with endless stories, it is our mission to share the memorable personal journeys and lessons learned of the extraordinary women in our community. Their stories are stories that enlighten us, inform us, and ignite the creativity that lives in each of us. Women Create is grateful that you are part of our creative world.